The FBI has come to the same conclusion as the Iraqi authorities that the deadly September shooting incident by Blackwater security guards in Iraq was unjustified, although under current law little can be done about it. But not only is Blackwater not subject to government oversight, the nature of its contracts with the tens of thousands of armed men under its command has only recently been exposed. Here to discuss the legal rights of Blackwater guards is Daphne Evyatar, an attorney and senior reporter at The American Lawyer. Her article, Contract with America, appeared in the October issue of Harper's Magazine, and I'm very pleased to welcome her to the show. Hello.
Hi, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
How many private military companies are operating in Iraq?
There's about 180.
Wow. Not just Blackwater.
No. Blackwater is one of a smaller number of security companies, so they are the ones providing armed services, armed security. There's lots of other companies providing all sorts of services that used to be provided by the military but are now provided mostly by private companies. So you actually have as many private military contractors there as you have soldiers.
Wow. But in the case of Blackwater and these few other companies, their large job, the main job, is simply providing security for whom? For visiting dignitaries?
That's part of it, visiting dignitaries. A lot of it is just providing security for goods that are being transported. You have companies like KBR, which is, used to be a subsidiary of Halliburton, that does a lot of the delivery work in Iraq. And they have unarmed people, just truck drivers who drive, and companies like Blackwater and others will provide security for those. In the case that I wrote about it in Harper's, that's what was going on. They were providing security for a supply of kitchen equipment.
What allows them to avoid government oversight or Iraqi law?
Well, back when Paul Bremer was in charge, when he had the Coalition Provisional Authority, he passed an order saying that all private security contractors or all private military contractors are not subject to Iraqi law. So since then, that has stood, and there's been some discussion in Iraq about trying to change that, but it's been very difficult.
Is this a new thing? When we have engaged in other American wars, or I don't want to go back too far, but let's say Kosovo, did we have a similar situation?
Not nearly to this extent. I think there's always been, certainly since the 90s, there has been some involvement of private military contractors, but not nearly to this extent. Everyone says this is unprecedented, especially when you're talking about armed security guards. It's really unusual, and this seems to be the first war that we're relying on them so heavily.
And why would somebody give them so much carte blanche? It must have been evident that somewhere down the line problems were going to arise.
Yeah, but you know, we don't have the kind of military force that's needed to really do what we need to do in Iraq. I mean, this administration went into this war, I think, not aware of what it was going to take, clearly. And so they're very reliant now on hiring these private guards to go do the work for them.
Well, if a situation similar to the one you describe, or the one that occurred in September, had involved regular military personnel, wouldn't the situation be different? Wouldn't they be subject to all sorts of laws?
Sure, they're subject to military law, and there's a whole military justice system that's set up specifically to deal with problems involving military soldiers, and they have certain rights, and they have certain responsibilities. And the problem here is that there just isn't a legal system that's presented to deal with these sorts of problems. So whether the problem is that the private contractors have gone out and shot a lot of people up, as they did in September, or that they get killed, as in the case that I wrote about in Harper's, where these four guys were sent into a battle zone and they were attacked and killed. And there's a lot of evidence that the company knew they were sending them into a battle zone, that they were not given the sufficient protection and armor and weapons that they needed. And the men were killed, and it was very likely preventable, and yet there's no one held responsible.
So the responsibility, it's really not a matter of of giving the Blackwater employees carte blanche. It's really giving Blackwater carte blanche, and that would apply both to the actions of its employees, but also its actions towards its employees.
Yeah, and that's what actually what I was really focusing on in the article in Harper's, and I feel like has been kind of lost in the media coverage about this issue of private military contractors. There's been a lot of discussion about these armed guys who go out there and shoot people up, and they're not being held responsible. But it's really not about these individual men. It's about the companies who send them out and don't give them adequate direction of what they're supposed to be doing, often don't give them adequate protection to deal with a situation they're in, and they're kind of left on their own to fend for themselves. And inevitably, that's causing a lot of problems.
How many armed guards are working for Blackwater right now in Iraq?
The last I heard, it was about 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
There's about 20,000, I think, armed security in Iraq for all different companies.
We hear a lot about the CEO of Blackwater, Eric Prince. How does he fit into all of this? I mean, is he the guy who negotiated this deal?
I doubt it. Most likely, it was his lawyers, and he has some very well-connected Washington lawyers that negotiate these deals. And what really shocked me in this situation was I came across the contract that was agreed to between Blackwater that it uses when it hires men to work for it. It's mostly men. That's why I keep saying men. They're usually former Marines and different kinds of former military, armed military people.
And nobody really knew much about these agreements until now?
Right. These are always kept secret. And this particular contract came out only because some litigation was brought. The survivors of the four men who were killed in Fallujah back in March 2004 brought a legal case against the company. And as part of the documents filed in the case was this contract. And within the contract, you see that they say that all of the terms of the contract are secret. Everything is confidential. And within the terms of the contract, the company has required the people that it hires, which it doesn't even call employees, it calls them independent contractors, which allows the company to not have to pay Social Security taxes, to not have to provide health benefits.
They're freelancers.
Exactly. I know a lot about that. I was a freelancer for a long time myself. You don't get much protection. And in this specific case, they're sending you into a war zone without that protection.
And you say without adequate equipment and a lot of other stuff. One of the men involved was Stephen Helvenston.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us about him and why he's the focus of your article?
Yeah. Well, his was the contract that I got a hold of. And he often went by Scott Helvenston. And he had been a former Navy SEAL, a trainer, he had been basically done a lot of different kinds of jobs. I'm sorry, a fitness instructor was what I was thinking. He had done some work on reality shows. He didn't have a steady job. He was divorced. He had a couple of kids. He needed to make some more money, and he saw that Blackwater was hiring to get people to go to Iraq. And the money was pretty good. They were offering $600 a day, not
wow.
as much during training, but when they were actually working as guards, they would get $600 a day.
So they're well-paid freelancers.
Yeah, these
guys
are.
Could they buy insurance, do you think?
They were supposed to buy their own health insurance, their own life insurance, that sort of thing. The company didn't provide it.
And Blackwater sent these guards into Fallujah at a time when even the U.S. military wouldn't send troops there. Was that typical procedure?
No, and that's what's so odd about this incident is it's not clear why they sent them into Fallujah. Really, they were trying to deliver these kitchen supplies to a military base that was to the west of Fallujah, but for some reason they told them to take the route that went through Fallujah, and as you say, it was at a time when even the U.S. military refused to go there because it was so dangerous. It was full of insurgents.
In the contract, are these men informed what might befall them in Iraq?
Yeah, actually, I mean, that's another thing that was pretty shocking to me about these contracts is they actually list the risks. They say, you know, you are going into this knowing that you are taking on these extraordinary risks, which include, among other things, if you don't mind my just reading a little piece of it because I thought it was just amazing, includes being shot, permanently maimed and or killed by a firearm or munitions, falling aircraft or helicopters, sniper fire, landmine, artillery fire, rocket-propelled grenade, truck or car bomb, earthquake or other natural disaster, poisoning. It just goes on and on for almost a full page of the insane things that could happen to these people. And it says, you know what, you're taking on this risk and you have no recourse.
And how were Stephen Helvenston and the other three killed when they went through Fallujah?
Well, they were part of a convoy that, as I said, was guarding these kitchen supplies. And they were hit by, I think it was Helvenston was first hit by a bomb or a mortar attack. And then there was sniper fire that attacked all of the trucks. Gasoline was thrown on them. They were set on fire. This was an image that people might remember. It was sort of beamed around the world. A lot of the media picked this up because these guys were burned alive and then dragged from their cars and dismembered. And a couple of them were actually hung from a bridge over the Euphrates River. And that image was seared into the minds of many people.
But obviously not people who sign up to work for Blackwater, because just reading that list of horrors and then seeing those pictures would have scared the heck out of me.
I know. I think maybe, you know, some former Navy SEALs see it as a challenge. But I think actually, to be honest, when you, I mean, I know this as a freelancer myself, people ask me to sign contracts all the time. And you don't read all the fine print. You just assume like, oh, okay, this is an official company and they're working for the government and of course it's okay.
I don't know. Maiming just comes popping right off the page when I'm looking at a contract. Daphne Abiatar, attorney and senior reporter at The American Lawyer, is my guest. She wrote Contract with America, and it is in the October issue of Harper's Magazine, last month's issue. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. Can these guys quit when they're in Iraq? Can they be fired?
Well, that's another interesting thing about this contract is they're not allowed to quit. The only way they can quit is if they're not being paid, and even then they have to wait and file a request to be paid. And otherwise, they're not allowed to quit. They can't just say, this is too dangerous, I'm leaving. However, the company reserves the right to fire them without cause at any time.
Well, that sounds like a rather unbalanced agreement.
Very unbalanced. And people have been fired. And actually what happened, one of the things that happened here was Scott Helvenston, the night before the men were sent out on this particular trip, they had lots of reasons to believe that this was going to be a very dangerous route. They weren't prepared. They weren't given time to check out the route, which they were supposed to be given. There weren't enough people going to be on their convoy. And they said, you know what, we're not doing this. This is too dangerous. We shouldn't be doing this. And basically they were told, go or you're fired.
Well, since we've already established the fact that Blackwater is really not culpable under current laws for anything that happens, what's happening here? Why is there a lawsuit? Aren't they protected by their contracts and by their agreement with the U.S. government?
Well, you know, it's a little unclear. I mean, it sure looks like they're protected by this contract, but the families, the survivors of these four men who were killed, went ahead and sued anyway. And they have different theories about why basically this contract shouldn't hold up in court.
Well, regular soldiers can't sue the military for wrongful death, but they can at least demand an investigation. They can't do that if they work for Blackwater?
No. And actually, that's what happened here is that's how this whole problem started, was the family said to Blackwater, well, we want to know what happened. Why were these guys sent to Fallujah at a time when it was being dominated by insurgents? It was so dangerous. Why did this gruesome death happen? And the company said, well, we can't give you our internal investigation. You'll just have to sue us if you want to get it. At least that's what one of the survivors testified to Congress about. She said that she was told the only way she'd get the information is if she sued them, and so she did.
Are the families in the lawsuit claiming that Blackwater caused the deaths of their loved ones?
Yes.
That it broke some kind of guarantee?
Yes. I mean, they're claiming that that these men were not given the protections that they were promised. So that essentially Blackwater violated its agreement with them by not giving them armored vehicles, by not sending them out with enough men, not giving them time to, not even giving them a map. They were sent out there without a map.
But that actually was a breach of contract, filing that sued. And hasn't Blackwater countersued the families?
Yeah. The level of chutzpah is amazing.
What do you sue people for? We're suing you because you complained that your loved ones died while they were in our employ?
That seems to be what they're saying. I mean, my guess is that there's a little something else going on here as well. What they did was they filed a suit against the estate of the survivors, saying for $10 million, saying that they breached the contract because they filed their lawsuit, and that as a result they get $10 million, and that the families have to reimburse Blackwater for their legal costs, which is really amazing.
But that doesn't mean that they don't have a good case as far as the current circumstances.
You mean the company or?
Yes. Well, the law sometimes is unfair,
yeah.
But it is the law.
Yeah. Well, the difficulty now where it's caught up is they filed this case and then they said, well, we want to move this to arbitration because within the contract says you're not allowed to bring a case in court and all disputes will be handled in private arbitration. And that's one way that the company is able to keep all of their dealings secret as well. So now the fight is over whether it should be an arbitration. And Blackwater is trying to have the whole thing resolved secretly and behind closed doors in arbitration.
Well, I would assume that the people running Blackwater right now are concerned about the bad PR they've been getting. And would want to see something like this go away. And then they have the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform also taking up the family's cause. Do you think that we're going to continue using companies like Blackwater in Iraq?
It seems like it, yeah. I mean, as long as we're in Iraq, I think that the government has so extended itself there and there is so little public support for sending more soldiers over there to die that I think... The Defense Department, certainly in its written plans, has said it plans to use these guys more and more, to rely on private companies. And in a way, it's the way that the government is allowed to be unaccountable for this war, because so much of what these companies do is private and it's secret, and they don't have any rights. I mean, the employees don't have any rights. And so as a result, the administration is allowed to wage a privatized war.
Why aren't the casualties of the people working for these private companies included in the official death tolls?
Because they're not soldiers. So they're not considered... Yeah, when you hear American deaths in Iraq, you're hearing about American soldiers. You're not hearing about all of these people. And many of them aren't American. I mean, there are a lot of Americans who work for these companies, but these companies also will hire people from other countries to act as security guards or as truck drivers, and they get paid much, much less. And the conditions of their work are much more difficult, actually, than the Americans are. They're treated like second, third, fourth class citizens.
Well, we're really talking about people who see themselves as soldiers of fortune,
yeah.
Who are, in essence, mercenaries. And the United States is now a country that fought against mercenaries in its own revolution, now employing mercenaries?
Yeah, unfortunately, that seems to be what they're doing.
And when will the arbitration take place? Do we know?
It's not clear yet. It's still caught up in the courts. The families have appealed the motion to compel the Blackwater's motion to compel it to arbitration. So it's now pending in the Court of Appeals in the Fourth Circuit.
Daphne Eviatar, Eviatar, is an attorney and the senior reporter at The American Lawyer. She wrote an article called Contract with America that appeared in the October issue of Harper's Magazine. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
On tomorrow's show, what official government documents tell us about the Bush administration's policies on torture. On Backstory, a look at the origins of the PKK, the Kurdistan Workers' Party, and why it's turned to violence recently. Also, New York Times health columnist Tara Parker Pope and Dutch novelist Kees Noteboom. Be sure to tune in on Wednesday. We will unveil the winners of our Thanksgiving cartoon contest, and we thank everyone who has submitted a cartoon. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Sarah English, Scott Goldberg, and Blake Neshek. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Tess Hartman, Fran Jacobs, Rachel Krantz, and Angie Sheldon. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. We'll see you tomorrow.